Congratulations, you have been nominated, not even nominated, but
Awarded.
I was awarded. So I was, crazy celebrating, and that's really excited. And that paid off in the sense of sharing your knowledge, be modest, trying to stay yourself, stay close to yourself, because I believe you have various ways of becoming an MVP. And I was a little bit down to earth and not really, okay, I'm an MVP. Somehow I did something good, but I always perceive myself not as the expert, because I see many others in the community. From my personal perspective, they were way more experienced, more advanced blogs, and more in depth.
Security podcast, MVP's fight to the last. Inside and the know-how, we take the challenge now. Welcome back to the Talking Security podcast, your go-to podcast for all things cybersecurity. My name is Frans Oudendorp, joined by my co-host Poyan Gebazi, and today we're thrilled to continue season 2. Of our MVP Security Insights series. Poyan?
Yes, Brans. And today's episode brings us a conversation we have been really, really, truly being excited for a long time. Our guest is Ronnie de Jong, Security Technology Fellow at Microsoft and a well-known in the Dutch cybersecurity scene. With over 20 years in the field, multiple certifications, and a very known old Microsoft MVP, Ronnie has been deeply involved in the modernizing security strategies for both central and local government. He's someone who lives and breathes community, innovation, and public impact and technology excellence. And for me personally, it's a very special episode as well, because like me and many others from my generation, we have all to thank Ronnie, because we all been growing up kind of with his blogs on SCCM Intune. And those sparked for me personally also my journey into blogging and knowledge sharing. So Ronnie has always been a leading figure in the Dutch community, definitely. And it's amazing to now see him put that effort, the same effort and collaboration from Microsoft. So welcome, Ronnie.
Okay. Thank you, guys. What a warm welcome, I would say. It's unbelievable. I'm silent. I'm almost silent looking for words. But no, guys, all jokes aside, it's a pleasure to be with you in this podcast. And always great to speak up and speak out about the community. And it's correct what you're saying. I'm passionate about IT. I'm passionate about security. And I'd love to share that. Back then as an MVP, but still also as a Microsoft MVP or Microsoft employee, I have to say. I'm still willing and where possible, contribute to the community in whatever means, whether it's this kind of podcast, but also doing our podcast ourselves, but also speaking at great community events like Experts Live. So it's always been a pleasure to stay connected with the tech community. So, yeah, it's a pleasure to be here.
And to kick off this episode, you already did a small piece, Ronnie. You have had a long journey in IT, in cybersecurity. And can you walk us a bit through your career and how that led you into the area where you know are now in Microsoft?
Yeah, sure. One thing stood out, and that's actually when I started my career. Back then, it was early 2000. Microsoft has always been as red line through my entire career so far, and that started with getting certified for my MCSE back then it was Windows 2000 being certified for all the various certifications. And that was a kind of a goal for me, an objective. And once I succeeded in getting my certification, I want to also put it in practice. And I started with a company which is actually in the broader sense with management, gaining a lot of expertise in a very short period of time and also getting experience. So what I learned, put it in practice. And so I was detached at various larger financial institutes in the Netherlands and responsible for large environments to manage. And over time, I wanted to be from more generic, being more focusing. And then I started to explore what my options are. And at some point in time, I started to work for a well-known Microsoft company, a Microsoft partner, Wortel back then. And I believe here we have all some background with Wortel as both former employees. So that's also something we should have in common. But that was my start for focusing on Microsoft technology. As you referred in the introduction, I was focusing on the modern management, SCCM, SMS back then. Focusing on that, rolling out migrations. I can remember I was also a product owner for the rapid deployment program. We were in a preview program where we are deploying and migrating to Windows 7. And I fully enjoyed. And over time, my interest was more on the System Center product. So I went to another Microsoft partner, Innovative. And I can remember 2014-ish back then, that time frame, the Enterprise Mobility Suite was introduced. And Enterprise Mobility Suite was founded on three main pillars, like the identity part, Azure Active Directory. We had Intune, and we had rights management, I believe. And that was also where I started with the journey of modern management by Intune. And I started to blog, and I was actually one of the front runners back then. And we had a kind of competition where you had the traditional, the management guys, which were definitely into SCCM. And if you were speaking up with Intune, then you was one of the new kids, and it was almost a curse to the traditional guys. But yeah, that was my journey where I started blogging, sharing my experience with Intune. Back then it was Windows Intune. It's where it started with. It was also with Silverlight portal. Yeah. It was crazy. But I still remember.
Competing to Sem Mobile and all the other MDM stuff, it was sometimes quite hard to defend our Intune stuff because it was starting up, and I think we both know how hard that start was of Intune in that back that days.
Yeah, we were definitely new to the market, and was our product perfect? No, far from it. But it came with a vision, and it came with confidence, and we managed it as of today, where Intune is definitely leading in the modern management, where it's almost bread and butter. But that's where my introduction started, and also where I started to share my experience with the community. And that turned out after 2 years, 2.5 years in becoming an MVP. And I can remember that as a remarkable moment. I was at the customer side. It was a municipality of Amersfoort. And I finished my consultancy job that day. And I was in the elevator. And it wasn't an elevator pitch, but I was disconnected for a while because there was no mobile coverage, and I stepped out to the elevator and walked outside, and I felt, hey, I received an email. And it was the first of the month. And I was, hey, congratulations. You have been nominated, not even nominated, but I was awarded. So I was, crazy celebrating. And that's really excited. And that paid off in the sense of sharing your knowledge, be modest, trying to stay yourself, stay close to yourself, because I believe you have various ways of becoming an MVP. And I was a little bit down to earth and not really, okay, I'm an MVP. Somehow I did something good, but I always perceive myself not as the expert, because I see many others in the community. From my personal perspective, they were way more experienced, more advanced blogs, and more in depth. But everyone, each and everyone, has his uniqueness and his own style. And as long as you are contributing to the community, and it can be in various ways, it can be very technical, in depth, level 500, 600. But it can also through other ways, helping each other, helping others by simple blogs. And there is room for that. Huh? So the community is give and a get, where the focus is on the give. And sometimes that's also an interesting one. You're not always aware what impact you're making, because you are seeing yourself as you're looking into the mirror. And that's how you perceive yourself. But that's not the standard where how others perceive you, in a way of reading your blogs and valuing your blogs, or whether it's like these kind of podcasts, or supporting as a volunteer to the various community events. And that's also the strength of the community. We have, each of us are unique, and each of us has something to offer to the community in his or own way. And I believe that that's also the very truth of and strength of the community.
Amazing. And go ahead, Bouyan.
No, I think I fully agree with Ronnie, and I think that's also something we heard from other guests we had, definitely in season one, people that shared how they become and look up to the MVP. So Ronnie, looking to your background, what was the spark moment for you to, okay, now it's time to switch over to Microsoft? Because for an MVP, it's all, for a lot of MVPs that I know, it's always the option moving to Microsoft is there, but it's always also a hard step because, you need to say goodbye to your, somehow to your MVP title. And so what was the sparking moment for you to make that decision?
Yeah, that's true. Well, the spark moment was the fact that at some point in time, I felt comfortable in the model management space. And I believe I was 6 or 7 years in that area, and I fully enjoyed. And in all the times that I worked for the various Microsoft partners, I have a close collaboration, particular in the local sub with the local Microsoft employees. I engaged with various peers, Microsoft colleagues, also together at customer engagements. And I've been asked a couple of times, hey, Ronnie, are you willing to make the step? Are you willing to jump? And at that point in time, I felt confident. I felt happy at my employees there back then. At a certain point in time, it also itching. It feels like, okay, close to the mothership, going to Seattle per MVP summit and working together. That's great. And I became curious and also had the ambition to also one day to sit at the other side of the table. And after a couple of times, Lisanna, she reached out to me and said, hey, Ronnie, is it the time right? And actually, a few cup of coffees went over, and then I said, yes, I'm going for it. And initially, I appointed for the cloud endpoint technology specialist. But during the interview process, she reached out and said, hey, Ronnie, change of plans, other priorities. We are seeking options positioned for security technology specialists. And I fully embraced that challenge and I accepted it because I thought, okay, change of employee, why not also change of technology? And I saw it also as an opportunity to grow. Of course, there is an overlap between model management and security, which goes hand in hand. But I saw there was a lot greater area where I could learn. And that's why I made the jump. And after almost four years, I'm still fully enjoying it. And I learned a lot of in the cybersecurity space. And never, ever a moment regret, despite the fact that I lost my MVP title, which is fine, because I believe also there it's good. It's good that there are many MVPs in the program for many years. And if they are still relevant, great. But I believe sometimes it's also great, like soccer. Yeah? You have a soccer team, you're successful. But at some point in time, you have to refresh your team. Yeah? They say never change your winning team, but that's not really true. You have to also renew the people, new positions, new insights. And that also frees up space to let other talents to stay up and also contribute to the community. So I see that also as a healthy approach, a healthy life cycle. So that's how my journey went, becoming a Microsoft employee and also with the implication of not being an MVP anymore. But the good thing is I'm still a Microsoft MVP. I'm still a Microsoft employee. It's in the wording. But that doesn't end my contribution to the community. So still as a Microsoft employee, I'm still contributing to the community where possible. And that's also still, best of both worlds, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, that's one of the key. I mean, we have France and me and others have experience and see you going to Microsoft. And also since you are there, you have been evolving and you see nowadays a lot more Microsoft local in the community events involved as well. And I have been hearing that you have been one of the key people behind that, inspiring others to join the meetups and community events, for example. How do you how do you see that Microsoft's involvement? Do you because I know you are pushing for it. What are your thoughts behind it now we are talking about it?
Well, first of all, I have, as a Microsoft employee, the freedom to contribute to the community. And ever since I joined Microsoft, I was advocating the community. And I can remember that talking about Experts Live, when I joined Microsoft, there were one or two local, perhaps three Microsofties, which were speaking. And the last year, this year, I believe they're almost in the double digit of Microsoft speakers, not only from the Netherlands, but also from abroad. But that's definitely where others also getting excited for the community. From the other side, we remain a company which has also a commercial insight, or I said approach. Yeah? And that sometimes that's I wouldn't say a fight, but that's all sometimes a balancing act in stating the right priorities. And I feel it's important to between the lines, between our what we are expected to do, that we are also, as a Microsoft employee, we are also kind of representing the Microsoft in the community. And it's more or less intrinsic motivation to contribute also in that space. And we are trying to be inclusive at D&I, but that's also contributing to the community in that sense. So that's my point, how to contribute and give back to the community. And it can be in various ways, and speaking or contributing or being at a meetup. It can be through various ways, but that's something we should get that fire ignited by everyone. And for some that works. For some it's working in a different way, but yeah, we still keep sharp on that and challenge each other on that perspective to remain involved in the community. And I think we are doing good, can we always better, but yeah, I'm confident also for the near future that we remain contributed in the community.
Nice. When switching a bit back to, not back, but forward to your work at Microsoft, you're currently focusing on public sector. What are sort of unique cybersecurity challenges that governments have compared to, for example, private enterprises? Is there a big difference, or is that similar? What kind of challenges do we have there?
Looking at it from an attacker perspective, they are very inclusive. So they are not making distinction whether it's private, whether it's enterprise, whether it's public. So that's the same. But what is the differentiator here is central government in general is regulated, highly regulated to a certain extent. For example, the BO, it's founded on the ISO norm hearing standards. That's something we need to be complied to. But for the remainder, there's not much difference. It's, I believe we have the same in central government or public sector in general. We are having the same challenges as for enterprises or the private sectors. So there's no much difference. And of course, we have different actors which has specific targeted central gov, also with the NATO summit, for example. And then we have also improved attention, making sure that we are improving some security measures. But it's a continuous cybersecurity in general. It's not a one-off, it's a constant. And we should remain sharp. And that's no difference for the central gov or public sector. So we have the same challenges here. And sometimes some organizations are very open to it. And with open means that they are very open for innovation. And some others have it a different pace. But I believe it's not specific for public sector. I believe that's also applicable for regular organizations, enterprises. You have the front runners, and you have also the organizations which are not able or more reluctant to adopt innovation.
Yeah. When looking at the technology that we have available, how are you leveraging the Microsoft security portfolio to support public institutions and national cybersecurity frameworks?
Yeah, it starts with the basics. Of course, with Microsoft technology, we have a great ecosystem where we can help our customers to improve their security posture. Great products. But it's also fix the basics, make sure you have the brilliant basics in place, get current, stay current, make sure that you have implemented MFA and preferred phishing resistant MFA. And these are kind of open doors, but despite all the advanced security controls we have, security features and products we have in our portfolio, it's lacking on the fundamentals, which are not in place, or the government for that is not in place. So yeah, it's great that you are securing your front door, but if you're leaving your back door open, so the chain is as strong as the weakest link, I would say. Make sure that you have the basics in place, and from there, leveraging the enhanced features. That's fundamental. So that makes it complementary. If you doesn't have the basics in place, then you can implement advanced security solutions like XDR, Defender, etc. But then it's not the optimal way. And that's something in day to day where we can make the difference with customers.
It's funny this answer. Not that's not true, but every year I talk to many of our colleagues acting in the cybersecurity space, and every now and then this answer is coming back, because we are still need to do the basics. Even if we are that far with technology, we have still a lot of organizations that needs to make the first step, and that's it's quite hard to make that adoption. That adoption grows. Don't understand me wrong, but it's quite hard to push them, that kind of organizations, to move forward. And that's the reason why we're still talking about these kind of things, in my opinion.
Yeah, and another thing which is interesting, I would recommend always to have a risk-based approach, because the risk determines, and also if you're looking from a business perspective, what are your business objectives, what are your crown jewels, what are your critical line of business application, that mandates the priority on what security controls and measures you have to take, also respecting the risk appetite, and that should always prevail. And of course, we as Microsoft constantly developing, innovating, and that's innovating. That's the only way forward to stay relevant, also when it comes to security solutions, because the bad actors also keeping up also with AI. And if you are battling with AI with legacy tools, yeah, then you lost. Huh? You have to think in graphs, not in lists. And we as defenders should be 100% accurate, where an attacker, one attempt is already enough to be successful and do harm. And that doesn't give us a luxury position, although we are well equipped with a lot of great solution technologies in our toolkit, but it all reminds us to have the brilliant basics in place and apply that or combine it with a risk-based approach to be successful building a security practice.
Yeah. And Ronnie, looking to on the Dutch market, focusing more, do you see also any differences between on the local side and regional side? For example, you also mentioned we have BO in the Netherlands, we have Refinance, we have DORA, that's of course the financial market more. What do you think that is a really regional that or a risk that stands out most currently, that where the public sector is challenging with?
Hard to give an answer on one or two or three specific areas. But what I do see more and more is that we have the technology in place, that we have the technology to our fingertips, but it's shifting also from technology side more and more to the human and process side. That's something where I see also, or where, yeah, I see new challenges. So it's not always the technical side of the house which needs attention, because we recognize that technology is needed, but it's more the combination also to fine-tune that, make sure that we are securing that in our organization. And that's sometimes a pitfall. If we're looking at Defender for Cloud, where we have posture management, and to improve your posture, and then we have a lot of findings, we have a lot of recommendations, a lot of security attack paths. And then if you have the conversation, and then yeah, who is looking at these findings? Who is taking care, taking responsible? Is it the resource owner? Is the business? Whom to reach out? Yeah, good question. Yeah. And then it's based on best efforts sometimes. And of course, there are organizations which have the governance in place, but sometimes governance, I it's lacking, and that's definitely an attention point.
Yeah, I do agree with you. I think that's something we are not only seeing with public sector, but also with private enterprises, that are the amount of data that Microsoft's providing you these days with Defender, for example, solutions like Defender for the application that's now part of your SS, the OAuth. I mean, it gives you an introduction towards your whole landscape around app registrations and the volume of information that's there. And if you see it, you need to act on it. So
yeah,
and that requires not always technology, but it also compliance and regulations to be able to enforce that. So
discussing this, it reminds me also to stay on top, because what you mentioned, I see that particularly and also in Azure and infrastructure, 3 to 5 years ago, organizations started to implement Azure subscription landing zones, but it wasn't in regards to the well-architectured framework or the COF. And now they are retrospectively have to apply those security controls, but they are far, far from compliant to the regular controls like the well-architectured framework. So they have to retrospectively apply that. And the same with consent, for example. Yeah, back then we were able to consent on behalf of the organization. Nowadays it's blocked, but they might still end up with applications being granted access 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago. And that's also some rework organizations need to do to keep up with.
Yeah. And looking at that, and something you mentioned is that innovation is a key pillar, I think, for staying ahead. And looking towards the future trends, you also mentioned the two letters technology already. But what do you see? What trends do you see in the threat intelligence or security operations for the coming period, which excites you the most?
Trends in general, it's unavoidable.
Don't say Copilot or something like that.
Well, let's say AI then. I don't say the word, but Gen AI. That's definitely, it's the actually with security operations, we had automation, and of course we had attack disruption, where we are leveraging the platform to do automatically invoke and prevent harm. But we are now to a point where automation to a certain extent is almost reached the potential. And I truly believe we can stretch that. Yeah. But combined with the human effort and human resources, we have to step in to a next wave where we can leverage AI. And I won't advocate the word Copilot. Beep. But yeah, that's coming. And I see organizations, although they are not quite sure how to leverage that and how to capture the potential, I do see a lot of organizations exploring what can AI mean for their organization, what added value can bring it. And we are now just exploring what use cases and value add can be generated. And it's a matter of time where we now shifting from the embedded version to the standalone version to agents. And agents, it's more obvious that we have guarded use cases. It's actually building blocks. So there is an ecosystem of building blocks by means of agents. And then you can see, hey, this agent is meaningful to me because it's addressing a certain issue or challenge we are facing. Then it's coming with value add. And if the value versus the cost are in balance, and the cost balance ratio, then we are successful. But definitely AI, and although it's not there yet, no, it's not perfect, but I do see a lot of organizations, they are curious. And curious, that's also part of our culture to stay relevant, embrace curiosity, try, explore, fail and stand up and iterate, and that pace will become faster, and then you familiarize yourself and you also familiarize your employees, and then definitely that's the next wave, that's the next big thing, I believe, in the upcoming years, also with the cyberspace.
Yeah, and would that so what would then be your advice for those that are starting today with cybersecurity? I mean, and partly focusing on those that are aiming to contribute, for example, to public service and national resilience. Would that be just getting experience with it, or where should they start, in your opinion?
No, that starts with the fix the basics. That's for sure. Guidelines, policies, make sure that you adopt an information security framework, like the NIST cybersecurity framework. It doesn't really matter what kind of body or framework you choose a body. Although it's not perfect, but at least it gives your direction to implement a successful information security, implement the basics, and then in a natural growth path, growth in your maturity. And then automation, of course, is key. And I would also recommend configure before customize. Try to stay up with the defaults and not to customize things. Of course, you have to some scenarios, but keep it simple. Because if it's becoming complex, complex itself is also introducing risks. Yes, keep it simple. That's also one. What? Yeah, it's open doors. It's not way different than 20 years ago. It's all the same principles, but in a different context. And that's already where you make the difference. It's a kind of awareness. It's also practice what you preach. It's also not at consulting our customers, but also in how you are behaving, that you also are behaving securely, locking your screen, even if you're at home, locking your screen, and also applying that basic hygiene for yourself as a role model. And that's also what is expected from the community, making the link back to the community. And if you also teaching your kids in that behavior in a responsible way, with respect, from growing up, then it's also giving them the right guidance when they are entering the cybersecurity space or the professional market in general, and do that in a respectful, responsible, and secure way. So that goes beyond our profession.
Interesting. It's more going towards the basics. I think also what you are trying to say is like understand the why, and not per se the what. Right, because it starts with understanding the concepts, and then you can do all kind of stuff on top of it. And if you start customizing, and everybody, all customers want to customize everything, but most often. Yeah, you need to ask yourself if you really need that much level of customization as well. Often, I do agree with you, because it overcomplicates stuff hugely.
True.
Looking at Franz, I think he's ready for the question of the show. So,
yeah, we are moving deep into this episode already, more than almost 40 minutes on the go. So it's time to get the AI question. So Ronnie, you have put in a lot of information in the form that Puyan has shared, and we put that into, what was it, Copilot, ChatGPT, whatever. An AI solution, and that AI solution gives us a question for you. Ronnie, you have worked at the intersection of public sector security and cutting-edge Microsoft technologies. given your engagement with entities like at National Cybersecurity Center in the Netherlands and at Cyber, let's do it in Dutch, Cyberweerbaarheidsnetwerk, what does cyber resilience mean to you in practice, and how do you help organizations move from reactive security to proactive resilience?
Yeah, the collaboration with the government and indeed the Cyberweerbaarheidsnetwerk or NCC, that's actually my personal mission and also my mission with some direct colleagues, because giving it that mission is also giving purpose to what drives me day by day. And that's indeed making the Dutch society a bit more secure. And of course, that can be achieved by using and leveraging our technology, but it goes beyond that. As mentioned, it's not only technology. And that's also part where my community heart plays a role, because that's also contributing to the Cyberweerbaarheidsnetwerk, for example, in digesting papers, informing small and mid-sized companies. Yeah? The bigger companies helping the smaller ones. It's all about knowledge sharing. That is contributing to make the Netherlands a bit more safer. And that's also the way we have different functions. And one of them is information sharing, where I was involved. And that can be by leveraging a CTI platform, a cyber threat intel platform, also giving the NIS2, where now we have 50 to 200 ministries and ZBOs which are eligible. Now with the NIS to up to 11,000 potential companies. And that's also a scale challenge. And that's where we also try to find a way how we can make that intelligence information available and in an eased manner make that available to all those potential constituents to share that information, sharing back the sightings, so that the NCC, for example, is able to form a kind of a threat assessment of the Dutch society. And that's also contributing in at handelings perspective, the license to operate, to increase our cybersecurity. And that's on Dutch level, but that's also rolling up to national and international and on global scale. So that's my modest contribution, working together with these kind of bodies to make it easier for the society to leverage available information in an actionable way. So that's definitely great to contribute to.
When talking about community, you've been active in the community and in community driven initiatives like workshops, roundtables, quite a while. What role does community play in shaping national level cybersecurity? So what can we do as MVPs, for example, or as IT enthusiasts or cybersecurity analyst at a certain company, here in the Netherlands, in the US, wherever? How can we act in the community and have initiatives that are coming around? How can that help to shape the national level of cybersecurity?
Yeah, within community, of course, we have the known meetups, the known bodies already, but they are organized and centralized in the cybersecurity space or in different areas. I think where we have the intersection and also where we can have interest for both parties is the collaboration to public and private working together, and not only engaging with the known community, the tech community or security driven bodies like user groups or YellowHat or other things, but also contribute as a subject matter expert in, for example, ISACAs, where we are sharing our information and working together, whereby we are also stepping over our interest of a particular organization. And then we also put in the center the common challenges we are facing. And that's, I believe, where we as MVPs and community can play an important role, where we can help bigger organizations, the smaller ones, giving the experience the bigger organizations have and make that available also to the smaller organizations. That's also a way how we can help each other.
Nice. And Bojan, take care. Are you taking one of the last questions before we moving into some fun fire questions that we have left?
Yeah, I think we heard a lot on Ronnie. So I think to close it up, maybe with some personal insights and goals for you. Looking with to your intense focus on both technology today, what is it that keeps you motivated every day to do this regarding the national cybersecurity, for example?
The interaction with people, that's foremost. Today I was also on site with the customer, having the interaction, having the appreciation, the experience you have, sharing that with them, give them guidance. That's really rewarding. That feels like rewarding, and that feels also contributing to the society. Another thing which keeps me energized is the innovation. Sometimes it feels overwhelming because the constant push of new technology, but that's keeping me also young, I would say. So that's also another side of driving, staying energized, and the experience I gained over the time, and positioning that in a shifting from operational to a more technical and strategic approach. That is, for my personally, also an interesting angle and also a learning part, and learning that not only over the axle of technology you're able to make impact, but also on a strategic way you're also able to make impact. And that's also putting me in the different audience, different conversation partners, and that's also something which I try, and sometimes I fail, but then I learn, and that's also what I'd like, and that's also keeping me excited to learn every day what I learn, put that in practice, learning what's working, what's not so good working, and that constantly, yeah, improving yourself. So that's really, yeah, I really like the space we are in, all we are in cybersecurity, and hopefully I have many years to go to stay relevant and contribute to improve our resilience.
Awesome.
And let's finish up with some fun quick fire questions.
Okay.
So short answers only. Windows or Linux, be honest.
Yeah, Windows.
Yeah, that's an easy one.
What happened with the We Love My Linux?
Yeah, I'm always a UI guy. I'm not a command line guy. That's my weakness, weak point here. Sorry.
What's the favorite barbecue meat to throw on the grill?
Ribeye, buffet, tomahawk.
The tomahawk. That was the one I was expecting. One gadget you can't live without.
Well, nice one. This one. Then I go for this one.
And I think I know this answer. Last classic car that made your heart beat faster.
Yeah, that's a BMW 3.0 CSE. Point.
Yeah, BMW.
E9, the type E9, that's definitely one. Definitely look it up.
Yeah. One of the last CrossFit in the morning or special beer in the evening?
I would say I would go for both. That's really a hard one. I went to the CrossFit this morning at 7 o'clock, but I will leave that special beer for the weekend there. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
And as the last one, who would you play in the Netflix series Cyber Legends, the Netherlands edition?
Who?
Who would you play in the Netflix series Cyber Legends, the Netherlands edition?
We know you have some skills with playing roles on video, Ronnie. So there are some
Yeah, that was Back to the Future.
Back to the Future indeed.
That was, what was it? I forgot it. Oh, it's not on top of mind. I played it with Doc. No, I sorry.
I know the question, but the answer is quite hard for me because Cyber Legends, I don't know.
No, not me neither. So let me think and give you the answer.
Now,
Retrospective, man.
where it is related to what Puyan already mentioned, we had back in the days, we had an Xbox Live event, Back to the Future, and that was where you play the role of, what was it?
We will definitely add the video to the comments. So if you are curious.
Yeah, I forgot it. It's on top of my
The skate guy,
Marty
right?
McFly.
Marty McFly, that was the role play. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, or it's a kind of a guilty pleasure I try to avoid. So that can put let's keep it that way.
Yeah, but that was a legendary edition of Experts Life. We still talk about that, and
That was fun. That was really fun. Also the other episodes like the A Team, James Bond theme. I believe we did as Expert Live every time great openings videos. It's a kind of I'm start missing them. So hopefully next episode next year we have a new one.
Yeah, I think I have a dinner in 3 weeks, so I will bring it onto the table.
Yeah, please accept it as a kind of a feedback or ID box item.
Yes, let's do, I will do that. I will do that. Thank you, Ronnie, for joining us in this episode of the Talking Security Podcast.
It was a pleasure, guys. Thank you. Thank you. And I really enjoyed it also with the fun questions at the end. And all the best. And wish you have another great year and great episodes. And looking forward to the next one.
Thank you. That wraps up another inspiring episode of the Security MVP Insights. What I'd say, Ronnie, thank you for joining and sharing your vision, your experiences, and the incredible work you're doing to protect public infrastructure, but also the society as a whole within the community. So thanks for that. And to our listeners, if today's discussion sparked new ideas or raised questions, we'd love to hear from you. Be sure to follow us on LinkedIn, on X, where you can find Talking Security, and you can view our upcoming episodes with even more brilliant minds in cybersecurity.
So, thanks again, everyone, for tuning in. And as always, stay curious, stay collaborative, and stay secure.
Talking Security Podcast.